he wants to take me again.
What is up, creeps? Welcome back to Not Another Queer Horror Podcast. I'm your host, Trevor, otherwise known as Christian Mingle, and I'm so happy that you have come back for episode 2. So for today's episode, we are looking at a very thought-provoking film. When I finished watching the movie, my notes were pretty all over the place, and then my conversation with my guest, Chino, was equally all over the place. He and I led each other on some pretty wild tangents, which resulted in a 2-hour conversation that I had the arduous task of paring down to a manageable 42 minutes for you. But I think I did a pretty good job of making it as cohesive as possible. Apologies in advance for all the random jump cuts because they're there. But please enjoy this conversation. If you haven't already checked out The Neon Demon, it is available on Amazon Prime. So if you want to pause this, check it out, and then come on back, you'll have a bit more context. Otherwise, enjoy the conversation between me and Chino. Today, we are joined by my good friend, John Christian, otherwise known as Chino, to all of those who know and love him, and really to know him is to love him. Chino is a brilliant artist in many facets, just to name a few, wonderful photographer, which we're going to talk about a lot today. Incredible singer. She's available for weddings, folks. She just had a great tour of like 7 weddings in 1 year. And then she's got like a bunch of other skills too, but you know, those two are the ones that I love the most, but we're gonna let her talk about herself a little bit today. So Chino, whenever I bring a guest on, I like to ask them to give us a little self-identification. That way, the listeners have a better understanding of where you're coming from and your perspective. And also, so I know that I'm addressing you properly. So I'll go first. I am a gender non-conforming, cis white, pansexual, queer man. Generally, my pronouns are he, him, but I am open to and appreciative of any pronoun you throw at me. Chino?
I am definitely a fierce Gaijin, as I would love to classify myself. That did not go as easily if you'd asked me a couple of years ago, and we're talking about like years ago. I'm definitely more comfortable now. Definitely my pronouns are, of course, he, his, but of course I am very, very open and I love playing with she.
Of course we do, yeah.
And queen, as you know. Because, you know, we love that. Yes. But yeah, I mean, and then, and to me, when you basically asked me to review this movie, I was definitely very, very excited because you know my perspectives about fashion.
Yeah.
You know, and I've always have used fashion as kind of like my other way of expressing myself. I remember before coming out, that was one way of doing it, but now even more so on how comfortable I am. With myself, so
yes.
All the more do I love this movie, I guess.
Yeah, so the film that Chino has been hinting at that we're going to be talking about today is The Neon Demon. We'll get to that in just a moment, but yeah, he's already kind of given away why it is I connected him to this film. This film, for those who don't know, is all about fashion, specifically the modeling industry, and that's something that I know is very near and dear to Chino's heart. I think most of us tend to express ourselves through our fashion, but Chino really goes there with it. And really, I think what's so wonderful about your approach to fashion, and just like, not even just like fancy fashion, just like your daily, like even right now, you're all put together for this video chat. But like everything is so intentional and everything has a purpose. You know, it's not just, like for me, I'll like maybe match a shirt to a pair of pants, and if that's fine, I'll just grab whatever shoes feel comfortable. But for you, it's like to the socks. Everything has like a purpose and a moment and a feature. And something that we will discuss a lot today is going to be your Instagram. And I really think, kind of speaking to the point that you made, your Instagram is a true testament to just how your evolving fashion, or rather how your fashion has evolved to kind of represent your comfort with yourself and your expression of yourself. So it's really wonderful. I did a little bit of Insta stalking today, obviously.
Yeah.
And the last thing I like to ask guests as a means of introduction, Chino, is what is your connection to horror?
So I've always loved horror. I'm in a way we're in, it was so huge in the Philippines, but you know, the horror in the Philippines or in Asia particularly is not what it is in America. You know, in America, it's all about, like, to me at least, the way I've gotten to know, I guess, a Western way of going about horror is that it's more of like the murder. It's more of like somebody passes on and sort of stuff. This in the Philippines, it's more about like the spiritual. Like, yeah. The other world.
Yeah.
Or like monsters and stuff like that. But it's mostly like, you know, we hearken over like souls and stuff like that more than just gore. And that's why like Asian horror movies speak so true to me. And I find them even more scarier compared to psychological thrillers, like what we're about to discuss. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love me some Wes Craven moment, you know, like I love me some Nightmare on Elm Street and all of that. And I've grown up watching, you know, films like The Exorcist and stuff like that. But that's kind of like where it is. Like my aunt and my sister was the one who was basically the one who literally sat me down and basically taught me how to appreciate it more than just the scare factor, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then of course, studying film here in the US made me appreciate it more and paying attention to those types of things, which I'm really, really excited to dissect this movie because I'm gonna try to like hearken on those skill sets again that I've, something that I've not tapped on for quite some time now.
Okay.
So that's kind of like where the association is. It's like it's all about the imagery now and stuff like that, especially with this movie. So
yeah, definitely. It's interesting. I don't wanna because I can get on a tangent about Asian horror for a while. I'll probably have to be back on for another episode for that. But there's also usually some sort of deep lesson, usually some sort of moral lesson. Yeah. I always find after I watch an Asian horror film that I feel like scared but also moved.
And you're right about that. You're right about the having the moral stories because that's heavily ingrained in our culture. There's always some sort of value to it. That's kind of like, I guess you can say cost of entry in a way. Cool. Like, you know, for a fact, we're in, like when you're watching this horror movie, you know for a fact that, okay, I'm expecting a lesson. I'm expecting a moral.
Yes.
We're expecting an Aesop fable. You know, like, it's kind of like that.
Okay, right. So before we get too caught up in this, let's get into the movie we watched today. So, as we said, we watched The Neon Demon. This came out in 2016. It was written and directed by Nicholas Winding Refn. I hope I'm saying that correctly. With assistance with the writing from Mary Laws and Polly Stenham. So we had three folks working on the writing, one of whom was handling the directing. This is seeming to be a theme with this podcast. I don't intentionally pick films that are written and directed by the same person, but I do really tend to appreciate them because I feel like you get a truer sense of, you know, the vision that was intended. Okay, and what a vision it was. Let's get into the summary, and then we'll talk about all of the gorgeous aesthetics. All right, so what's going on here? So we have Jessie. Jessie is 16. She has newly arrived in LA from some small town, I believe it's at... The summary read said Georgia, but I didn't note it down. And whatever. Small town
somewhere
girl.
South. Yes. Somewhere south.
Mm-hmm. Small town sheltered girl comes to the big city to make it as a model. The film opens on an amateur photo shoot. The photos are being taken by Dean, who we get more from later. Afterwards, Jessie meets Ruby, played by Jenna Malone. Oh my God, Jenna Malone. Jenna Malone. Mm. First of all, Jenna Malone is fabulous, period. But Jenna Malone plays such a scary villain because she seems so diabolical and capable of anything, but like she outwardly presents so timid and gentle.
Girl.
Have you seen another tangent already, but have you seen Antebellum?
No.
Okay.
I have not. And admittedly, this is the first time I'm meeting her.
Jenna Malone?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
First time.
You never saw Stepmom?
First time.
You never saw Stepmom?
Oh, wait.
She's the little girl Stepmom, the little teenager girl.
Oh, she... Oh!
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She's all grown up now.
Okay, yeah. Okay. She is grown up.
Yes, yes, very, yes. But she also plays a villain in Antebellum, and she is just, without doing anything, she is so terrifying. And I get the same kind of vibe for her in this. So anyway, we have Jenna Malone playing Ruby. Ruby is a makeup artist who meets Jesse at this shoot. She introduces herself to Jesse when Jesse catches her looking, like staring at her in the mirror. She seems really entranced by Jesse. And that seems to be the theme that everyone who meets Jesse is just like, oh my God, it's so beautiful. Oh, Jesse is Elle Fanning. I forgot to say that. Elle Fanning, who is gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. So Ruby takes Jesse to a party where she introduces her to other models, Gigi and Sarah. Gigi and Sarah don't really feel intimidated by her because she's very, you know, little small town girl. In the bathroom, they discuss the idea of women being either sex or food, which kind of comes to be a theme of this movie. I just want to leave that. We'll plant that and we'll let that sit and simmer. Jesse is quickly signed by Roberta Hoffman, played also fabulously by Christina Hendricks. Just her one scene, she's on screen for maybe 3 minutes. She says so much. So anyway, she books Jesse a test shoot with this really famous photographer, Jack MacArthur. At the test shoot, she runs into Ruby again, who appears concerned for Jesse's well-being. At the shoot, Jack asks everyone to leave so that he and Jesse are alone. He then asks Jesse to remove her clothes, which is very scary and has that very, you know, predatory, get the new girl naked type vibe. But for what we see, at least, it all seems very professional. I mean, albeit a little kind of weird and like definitely kind of out there as far as the artistic approach, but he seems to not be sexually doing anything. He's really trying to like, get a good photo, at least yeah. to my eyes. So anyway, Ruby then informs Gigi and Sarah of Jesse's shoot and how everyone expects her to just be like this major success because she's so different and so beautiful. The two models pretend to not really be concerned, but we can tell they're both very nervous. Then we see Jesse and Sarah at the same casting call. This is my favorite shot of the whole film. The shot of all the models waiting to be seen. This is only the second time I've seen this movie. The first time I watched it, I, you know, was really taken by this image, but this time I paid attention. None of them move. The only thing that moves are the eyes of the two main actresses, Jesse and Sarah. Otherwise, all the models, they're just waiting to be seen, but they're posing. It's
you know what it reminds me of so much, which is kind of like a really fierce establishing shot, is Lady Gaga's Bad Romance, the opening sequence. No one moves.
Take me back. Oh, I see.
She yes. literally, Gaga basically sits like that.
Yes, in the throne and then presses play or whatever, or yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes, it's just correct. Like that. And there's so many of those yeah. shots in this film, but especially this scene, it's just, I yeah. think that part's really striking. Anywho, yeah. Jesse and Sarah are at this casting together. Sarah, the casting people can barely even look at her, but Jesse, as soon as she steps up, like you visibly see the stylist is like breath is taken away. He's like dumbstruck. And obviously Jesse gets the job over Sarah. Sarah then, as she's leaving, stops in the bathroom, has a bit of a freak out, breaks the mirror, which Jesse hears. Jesse comes in to see what's going on. Jesse ends up getting cut and Sarah tries to suck her blood, which is very unsettling, as one might expect. So Jesse flees. In the midst of all of this stuff going on with Jesse and her modeling career, she is staying at this really seedy little motel that is run by Hank, the landlord, who is played by Keanu Reeves.
And delicious. I have
to say,
delicious.
First of all, yes, he's very gorgeous in this movie.
Delicious.
He's got that, like, he's got the daddy, like, mature look with the facial hair scruff, but he's got the short hair, not the John Wick hair. I like the John Wick hair, too, but, like, he looks hot. That said, he is a disgusting character.
Oh, like, my God.
Horrifying, which we'll get into. But I have to say, I think this might be my favorite Keanu Reeves role ever. Now, before all of
really?
Hold on, mama. Before all of the like Matrix heads and John Wick fans come for me, I'm not a big fan of action. Therefore, I've only seen the first Matrix once. I haven't seen any of the other ones. Haven't seen any of the John Wick. I haven't seen Constantine. So most Keanu Reeves films I haven't seen.
That Interview said, with the Vampire?
He's not an Interview with the Vampire.
No. Not Interview with the Vampire. Dracula.
I haven't seen the Dracula that he's in. So yeah, I don't know. I think I really like this role because to me it's very different for him and he plays it so convincingly. Like, I believe it. So anywho, Jesse is renting in a motel room at this motel. One night a mountain lion breaks in and destroys her room, and then Hank is trying to charge her for it. So the same day that Jesse cuts her hand, Dean, the guy that was giving her her photo shoot in the beginning, they've started not really dating, but just like hanging out. He's clearly interested in her, but she is really not interested in him that way. But she's here for the friendship. Anyway, he stops by to see her and she tells him what's going on with Hank. He confronts Hank saying that he shouldn't have to pay, but Hank intimidates him and he ends up paying for her. And Hank says, this is so gross. Hank says to Dean, he wants to make sure that he's getting something for it, meaning like, are you and Jesse fucking? Everyone asks, in this movie, everyone asks her, or like everyone wants to know who she's fucking, if she's fucking, we'll get to it. But anyway, he says, if you're not, I got plenty of girls in this hotel. A 13-year-old just checked into room 214 yesterday, which happens to be the room next to Jesse's. So like clearly Hank is a fucking skeez ball. That's like the side, there's like, you know, that's the B plot, if you will. So back in the fashion world, Jesse goes to her fashion show that she has booked. And it turns out Gigi, the other model she's met, has also booked this show. While they're backstage, Gigi tries to put Jesse down and make her feel like less than, because clearly she's intimidated that this new girl has the same gig she does. But joke's on you, Gigi, because the designer asked Jesse to close the show, which for those of you who don't know, that's like
huge,
the biggest honor. Yeah. And especially as someone, this is her first show. Yeah. So they do the fashion show. And this is the part where Jesse gives into, quote, the neon demon. So in the net, like literally the next scene, the fashion show possession scene, if you will, ends. And then the next cut, she enters a bar looking gorgeous, like looking like what you would expect a mod, like an off work model to look like, you know,
yep.
Looking like she's about to hit the runway, but like in casual shoes. So she goes to the bar with Dean, as well as Gigi, the stylist, and some other model, kind of as like a post-show celebration. During this post-show drink, there's an exchange between Dean and the designer regarding the difference between authentic beauty and manufactured beauty, which we're going to talk about a lot today. So Jesse goes home that night and she appears to fall asleep, but she then has like a dream slash premonition almost of being sexually assaulted by Hank, the landlord, who sneaks into her room and sticks a knife in her mouth, telling her to open wider. Very Cal from Euphoria. Sexual.
Very.
You and I are so sick because you and I are like, yes, daddy, put the knife in our mouth. But it's meant to be very terrifying, which it is.
I mean, it is. It is very terrifying.
So she wakes up from this dream premonition to hear someone trying to get into her room. Assumedly, it's Hank. So I don't really know how she like knew this was going to happen minutes before it did. But anyway, someone tries to get into her room. She deadbolts the door so they can't get in. And then she hears them go next door and attack the 13-year-old girl next door. And like, sounds like he's killing her, but I don't know. We assume she's getting raped. So she calls Ruby, Jenna Malone. Ruby is, she says she's house sitting for somebody. She's in this mansion and she tells Jesse she can stay as long as she wants. So Jesse is thanking Ruby for being such a good friend, and Ruby tries to seduce her pretty hard, actually. So
yeah.
Jesse firmly rejects Ruby. Ruby leaves her alone. And the next day, oh, we forgot to mention, Ruby has a second job doing makeup on dead bodies. So the next day, Ruby fantasizes about Jesse while sexually assaulting a corpse and masturbating on top of it. For anyone who watches Dragula, Victoria Elizabeth Black's finale performance of For Filth, when she like fucked the corpse, it's very that. It's like very that.
Yeah. I think that's when I texted you too. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
The part that really gets me is when she spits in the corpse's mouth. Girl.
No. Girl.
Yeah, she went for it.
I was like, wow. This mortician is fierce.
Apparently, that was one of the earlier scenes they shot. Like, they only had that set for, like, one day. So they did all of the morgue scenes in one day. And it wasn't intended to go that far. And I guess Jenna Malone, the director, just, like, went for it.
I mean, they went for it.
So while Ruby is indulging herself with this corpse, Jessie is indulging her self-obsession at this mansion. She's playing in dresses and putting on makeup, and she's really just like staring at herself and really feeding into this new version of herself. She puts on this really like ethereal dress, and then she stands on a diving board above an empty pool, and Ruby comes home and she's like, what are you doing? And Jessie's just like, basically like, I love myself so much.
Everybody loves me so much.
So as she like kind of floats away in her little like happiness of like, I'm so perfect, she goes back into the house and sees Gigi down the hall, and she asks her, oh, are we having a party? And as she asks her that, boom, Sarah comes out and fucking clocks that bitch, and they jump her ass. So the girls chase her throughout the house. I think they like cut her leg or something because she's like limping away, and they all corner her back outside of the pool. And then Jenna Malone, Ruby, she steps out and she pushes her into the pool. But because the pool has no water in it, she falls into the deep end and like cracks open her head, and she's like bleeding out. Next shot we see is the two models showering blood off of them and Ruby bathing in a tub full of blood. But we then later find that the other two girls ate Jessie. I guess to like absorb her looks or her power or what have you. So the movie ends with the two models, Gigi and Sarah, going to a shoot that Gigi has booked. Sarah is just there to accompany her. But the photographer, he's so taken by Sarah that he fires the other model and hires Sarah in her place. While they're doing the photo shoot, Gigi appears to get sick and runs off set. When Sarah goes to see what's going on, Gigi is like gagging and trying to throw up, saying, I need to get her out of me, meaning Jessie. She vomits up an eyeball, and then she grabs a pair of scissors to cut open her stomach to get Jessie out, but in doing so, obviously kills herself. Sarah, who's just been watching all of this, picks up the eyeball, eats it whole, and then just goes on with her life and goes on to do the shoot. And then the credits roll, and we have essentially what appears to be like, it just looks like a perfume ad, but it's like Sarah just like walking through the desert. So before we get into the topics I want to talk about, let it out, girl. What is your initial impression of this film?
It was definitely weird, right? Like, it was a lot to digest. Mm-hmm. It was a lot to think about. The one that was really, really impressive by it, two things, is number one, of course, and very evidently, the visuals. Mm-hmm. Like, just even the beginning sequence of it, like, just let's use film terms, the entire mise-en-scene, okay. The entire first sequence basically tells you that she's not coming out of it. She basically has locked herself between the lenses and this business. And then just that framing of that red frame, and then you see the outside world of it.
Yeah.
I was like, you're never getting out. You're never getting out.
Look at
you're
you.
Never
getting out.
You're locked in. You're locked in. You're going to die in here. We're talking about like one that could basically encapsulate the entire fashion industry in a horrifying way. Would be this movie, because we've all heard the story. Girl from like the small towns of New York or the small towns of Kansas City goes to LA, mm-hmm. and as you know, a lot of people are from LA. There's not a lot of locals.
Oh yeah,
people either survive or don't survive it.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of things. I guess that's kind of like the surface grime, as I would like to call it, right? Like that's the entire thing of the movie. But the thing that gets me the most is like the way they were able to basically show the psychological effects of what this industry does, and then not to mention the outfits.
Okay, so let's get into these discussion topics and see what we think. So what made me think of you when I considered doing this film, it's that the photography, and specifically where we see that from you, is your Instagram account. What is your take on Instagram's impact on, let's just narrow it down to like gay culture and you as a gay man?
It definitely affects the psyche of a lot of people. I admittedly am like that. And mind you, this is coming from a person that basically has created an Instagram to inspire people.
Oh.
In a way we're in, like, I have so many traumas in my life, mm-hmm. and to being like losing two siblings. And in a way, if I can find some sort of happiness in those dark times and have it be posted, especially for those people that know me, I hope they find a way or some sort of energy of some sort of positivity in the world.
Yeah.
That's kind of like where I'm at.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. I am not six pack abs. I'm also not white. I'm also not tall. I mean, I know I'm not ugly.
Ow.
You know, let's put it out there. I know that.
Right.
I know that. However, it affects me still. Yeah. Like you mentioned earlier, like there are so many of a lot of gays out there that basically is making a living just literally taking their shirt off. I needed to retrain myself in a way and really remind myself as to why I'm doing it, because I've gotten so lost in translation. It's not because I really need, I mean, an extra money is nice.
Sure.
A sponsorship would be great, right? Like a sponsorship would be great. But also at the same time, I need to keep constantly reminding myself that the reason why I'm doing this is because I needed something to, I needed a way for me to express myself and put some positivity out. Not because, I mean, of course, you're trying to attract people. Sure, it's. I mean, I would be lying if I say I'm not, because I am, right? Like, but I also wanted to make sure that it represents me in a way like that. When somebody looks at my Instagram, I wanted, especially for those people that know me, I want it to be kind of like, oh, that is definitely Chino. It's not like a manufactured, it's not the branded Chino. Like, yes, like when you see that Instagram of Chino, like that's actually him. That's who he is. And I hope that stays true. And you can answer that.
Well, so, I cannot speak for myself. Actually, it's perfect, because it perfectly segues into where I want this conversation to kind of go now. Because yes, first I will, to answer that question, I do think that your Instagram authentically represents you. What I do admire the most about you, as much effort and time and consideration you put into setting up and taking your photos, as far as I know, and I, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, unless you don't want to spill the tea on the pod, but I don't think you use any kind of Facetune or anything like that. Like, you play with colors and lights, but I've never seen you adjust anything.
No.
And I think that's really remarkable, because as we all know, one of the biggest things that people use their advantage on social media is Facetuning and stuff. Like, I hope this doesn't get me into trouble, but this is just a true observation, folks. So this is what it is. Take it as you will. But as I established in the previous episode, I have recently started exploring and widening my sexuality. So I've been like talking to women and stuff. And one of the things I see so frequently when you're looking at women's profiles on dating apps is the use of filters, and like evident use of filters, you know? Like, I don't know, just the use of filters on dating apps, to me, it seems like the last place you'd want to use it. Because when you show up and you're not glowing and your eyes are a different color, you know, I don't know. But the point I wanted to talk about is this idea of the fantasy versus the reality. You know, and while I do think that your Instagram is a true reflection of you, if I didn't know you and I just stumbled on your Instagram, I would assume that you are some like super rich jet setter, never works, living the glam life. And as someone who worked with you, I know that despite the fact that you do have,
surely not,
you have that champagne taste and you like to treat yourself and you do take yourself places, you work for all of that hard as hell.
I do.
And aside from like, you know, the occasional trips you may take, you live a very humble and modest life. So despite the fact that your Instagram is a true reflection of you, there is still that Instagram Chino.
Fantasy.
Yeah.
It's the fantasy.
And for me, like, I have two Instagrams. I have Trevor and I have Christian Mingle. And they're two very separate, or very different accounts. Christian Mingle is where I can allow myself to kind of really be the outward sexuality that I like to be. And the Trevor Instagram is where I kind of be more every day. That's really just for like, you know, family members and people that I don't want to see me naked. But still, I there is that fantasy aspect of the Christian page. And for people that don't know Trevor, that don't know the Trevor page and just know the Christian page, I'm sure they have a very different idea of who I actually am. I should have said this at the top of the conversation to connect this to the film. Christina Hendricks, who plays her manager, I guess, or her manager, she tells Jesse, who's 16, tell people you're 19, and Jesse's like, people are never going to believe that. She says, people will believe what they're told.
And then she goes out of the office, and then you can go.
Oh, bitch. For anyone who hasn't seen this movie, in this scene, Christina Hendricks takes a step out of her office real quick to go grab something from her secretary. And while she's waiting for the secretary to get it, she looks at the three girls in the waiting room for like less than a second and says to one, you can go home, bitch.
She's like, unfollow. I don't want you to
delete. Well, actually, so the idea, this kind of idea of like controlling the image that people see naturally allows me to pivot to the next part of this topic I wanted to talk about, which is kind of like the same idea within the dating apps. Because similarly to how we have like our Instagram fantasy version of ourselves, I feel like those of us who are on dating apps have our dating persona of ourselves, you know?
I was very apprehensive about going through it, and you know this. I was very, very apprehensive about joining it, and I did not join any dating apps till like the pandemic happened, because I was just like bored out of my
mind.
And to be fair, I can even like read to you like what my Tinder profile says.
Uh-oh.
Just to like encapsulate.
We're getting honesty on the pod.
Oh yeah, I have no shame here, no secrets. So I literally say, and then I sent this to 4 different people before I even posted it.
Oh, like as a proofread? Okay.
Not just a proofread, but just like, does it sound cheeky? Do I sound cute? Do I sound relatable? Like all of the things, okay? And then I'll tell you what a lot of people have been telling me. Okay, so hold on. So I say on my About Me, I say, they say you won't know until you try. So here we are braving this process. People say I'm a typical gay man. I say there's nothing wrong with loving Mariah Carey. Since my Aladdin is not in sight, I fly by myself to experience a whole new world. I love taking photographs, and I do enjoy dressing up, even though I wear nothing but white shirts nowadays. We'll call it pandemic chic. Right? So that's kind of like my profile.
Yeah, okay,
right there.
It's cute.
And I said like, oh, I think this is cute, mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then, and I quote, there has been at least 7 to 8 people have told me this, and they all said the same exact thing. Chino, with that profile, I would not even try.
Why?
You look so unattainable. You look so high above that. I'm not even.
That's such a compliment. I'm flattered.
And I literally said, "I said, is that even a compliment?"
I mean, it is. It's not one that you want necessarily, but because I think I look like trash on my.
Because like they were like they would be so afraid to swipe right because they wouldn't even try because they won't stand a chance.
I mean, okay, so looking at the photos and hearing the profile, it is a very well put together profile with one like to the level you don't normally see, hence why I'm comparing mine in my head right now and thinking that I look like fucking trash.
But that's just who I am.
But it is who
though.
You are.
You know what
I mean? That's true. I thought you were gonna say it was the Aladdin line, because of the whole thing, that was the only one that I was like, meh.
I thought it was very clever.
It is cute, but like I'm so not a Disney gay, so like
I thought it was very cute. I followed up with an answer. I follow up and I said, well, then I don't deserve them then. And they don't deserve me.
There you go. Well, I was gonna say they don't deserve you. All right. So surprise, surprise, we've been talking longer than we should have, and we're not even halfway through this. I'm gonna just cut the next topic and we'll go to the third one. What I want to talk about that's going to be kind of maybe a bit of a taboo topic is this idea of preying on innocence. So in the film, Jenna Malone's character, Ruby, is actually sexually attracted to Jesse. Ruby tries to seduce her. She says, I want to be your first. And it's like, I think it's really common among, let's just keep it in the gay community because we're talking like 2 gay guys right now. I think it's really common for gay guys to pursue either totally straight dudes who have never really been interested in men before, or just people who have never been sexually active before.
No, because here's the thing, in the Philippines, when they finally like syndicate shows from the US to here, mm-hmm. that became kind of like my definition of what is attractive. So it's the jocks, mm-hmm. it's the spikes, it's the angels, it's the...
Those are Buffy references for those who didn't get it.
Correct. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Buffy reference. And then you just see like, you know, the Dawsons and, mm-hmm. you know, the Saved by the Bells and every single Friday Night Lights. It's like, I will literally, if I can find a way to thank Justin Timberlake for basically confirming that I'm gay, it's this.
Send him a cookie cake. No one can turn down a cookie cake.
You know that scene from the video Bye Bye Bye? When he falls down to the ground, looks at the camera and smiles.
Yes.
Girl, when I tell you that I felt a lot of
all of our panties dropped. When he fell to the ground, so did our underwear, girl.
So, and then along with that too, a lot of straight dudes in Manila, if I pass on like a feeling that I have a crush on them, they would normally hurt me.
Like physically?
I would either get hurt. Yes, oh, wow. I would either get hurt, get teased. There have been multiple times when I've gotten thrown chocolate milk at.
Not chocolate.
Because
though.
I've said that he's cute. Or wow. Like somebody heard through the grapevine that I have a crush on this. Like I've gotten punched multiple times. I've gotten kicked. Like physically assaulted, right? Basically. Being in an all-boys school. Like it didn't really help being in an all-boys school. Because like now you're attracted to like these people. And then it's just like your idea. Is that now I cannot be friends with straight men.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to being here in the United States and like, you know, going to college here and stuff like that. When all of your straight men are so, your straight friends are so comfortable with you
mm-hmm.
to a fault
mm-hmm.
that I never thought is possible.
Yeah.
That basically feeds into your attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, I was able to basically say, oh my gosh, I have a huge crush on you and I did not get hurt. What? And then now I always get attracted to like the straight, muscular, straight presenting, top presenting, either gay or straight men, mostly straight men.
I'm gonna throw a quick pause on that, Miss Thing, because while I do know you get attracted to men like that, you also love you like a little twinkie twerpy little like baby boy.
And I fucking blame Timothée Chalamet for it.
Okay, well, as long as we know where to place the blame.
Okay, like I never was the one to get, but the moment Call Me By Your Name happened
uh-huh.
and he came into my world, uh-huh. oh my God. No, but like even the Twinkies that you're referring to, most of them are straight.
Right, yes.
Am I wrong?
No, totally. So that's kind of where I wonder if it also has to do with just that very common phenomenon of you want what you can't have. Like one of the interesting things that you and I have talked about a lot is when we did work together, We worked with a good handful of other out gay men who we could have potentially actually pursued with like, you know, legitimate hopes of something going on. But instead, we turned all of our attention to all these straight guys who have give us basically zero chance. And I wonder yeah. if it's that whole you want what you can't have. I also wonder if part of it has to do with the like, well, since I know they're straight, I'm already expecting to get rejected. So if and when I do, it's not going to hurt as much.
I always will feel like I'm not worthy enough to even confess to somebody who's gay that I'm attracted to them.
Oh, that's interesting. Why don't you think that you're worthy to tell them that?
Because like it's my self-confidence, it's my self-psyche, it's my self-issues, my self-worth type thing. Like the way, even though I keep saying that I know for a fact that I'm not ugly, there's this lack of confidence of like just being able to just like, you know what, I'm really attracted to you. Because that's why I tell you this all the time, right? I'm so jealous about your confidence of just being able to tell like our gay colleagues on how much you want them.
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliment. But
because that's absolutely true. Because I couldn't do it. And even just like, you know, like pursuing sexual relations, like I am not that confident. I have always had my guards up because of how I was raised and how the idea of trauma was basically ingrained in my head. And, you know, all of the things that you're basically is gambling on when you're just going to sleep with a stranger. And that's why I admire people like you, who's able to really explore themselves sexually.
Total
in a way.
Sluts.
Like, no. I didn't mean it that way.
No, that's okay.
Way.
I wear it. But you know what I mean? I wear it with pride.
It's something that I could not do. Uh-huh. And I've told you that multiple times.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that's what's happening in the sequence in the movie. Is that really, you really don't think that you're this, you're that? When in fact, here you are.
Yeah.
You're closing the show. Here you are, realizing you're now the star.
I think she always knew she had something. I don't think she realized how strong it was. Because she says, I knew I never had a talent, but I knew I was pretty and pretty could make me money.
Well, my mom said I was dangerous. That's right. My mom said I was dangerous.
I love that. I want that on a t-shirt.
That's right. I love that. And then this is the other thing that is, I guess I shouldn't say it's not obvious because it's definitely obvious. It's the comparison aspect in the movie. It's like you always, it's an endless comparison to somebody.
Yeah. They are intimidated by this girl, so they kill and eat her. But then there's going to be someone else to compare yourself to. They go to a photo shoot and the other model gets fired for this one. Like, there's always going to be, it's never going to end.
The last few minutes of the entire movie It's basically just the idea of the endless cycle, right? Also, not to mention, Desmond Harrington looks hot in this movie.
Who the hell is that?
Desmond Harrington is the photographer.
What's he from?
From Dexter.
No, I know. I don't. I've only seen the first season, so I don't recognize him. I know him from something. But yes, he does look very hot in a scary way.
He was from the first season of Dexter.
Saw it a long time ago.
My God.
Okay, so before we wrap it up, I always like to ask if there is anything you wanted to talk about regarding the film that we didn't touch on.
If I could entice our audience to be able to watch it, just because of the fact, like the attention to the setup of the shot, like
the mise-en-scène,
using the stir, it's just like it's something that for somebody who is interested in studying a setup of a shot, it's great, it's perfect. The way it was assembled, the way they use color, the way they use, like, and again, I will keep using it. It's the first sequence.
Apparently, she held that pose with her eyes open for so long that her contacts like melted onto her eyes. Yeah, isn't that wild?
Holy
and we call that dedication.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. Do you have any? Do you want to plug anything? Do you want to plug your Instagram or anything, or do you not care?
Follow me on I Am John Christian. And it's the same with, I think also TikTok is the same way. But she's not as active.
Okay.
That's Instagram. Same. She's not as active. Yeah. Nevertheless, thank you for allowing me to be part of this.
Thank you for being a part of this. It's so great to have you. All right. So that is our show for the day. If you would like to connect with us, you can find us on Instagram at notanotherQHP. And if you would like to get in touch, you can email us at notanotherQHP@gmail.com. Please go ahead and send your requests for movies, discussion topics. Again, if you have any guests to suggest, I would love to meet new people. So if you have someone that thinks they'd like to talk to me, let me know. Until next time, folks, stay creepy. Not Another Queer Horror Podcast is recorded, edited, and produced by me, Christian Mingle. All of the music used in this episode is produced by Mr. Fulton.